Our next presenter is Kevin Reddy, who's a member of our county council here in Santa Barbara County. And he's been our council for many years, and he's currently working with another department. And so we really feel blessed that he would be able to come in and talk to us today. Kevin.
Getting that going, we are like 45 minutes behind, and this is an hour presentation, so I'll do my best. I'm a past master at talking fast when I do it. It sometimes gets garbled. If I'm going too fast, I'll slow down. And the other thing I'm going to do, I looked at your schedule, and I see that Alan Martin's going to be here talking about legal descriptions, and Todd Collison is going to be talking about surveying. And my general subdivision law presentation has a little bit of both of those, to the extent that I think they're going to cover something later, it's just my guess, I'll just go over it real fast. Okay, first off, why should you care about subdivision law? Of course, you've got to put your parcels on there. One of the reasons I found that I liked the assessor's office and the mapping division to care about subdivision law is, over the past 20 years since I've been involved with them, they have been the ones that have caught probably 15 to 20 cases of blatant or negligent violations of the Subdivision Map Act, because the assessor's office is the only element of county government that, when somebody files a new deed, looks at it substantively. Unless there's some reason why the surveyor's office would look at it, or planning and development for some permit or approval, they never look at a deed that's filed with the recorder's office. But the assessor's office does look at it, and they can look at their existing parcels. If they get something totally new, we've got a system in place in our county where the assessor gives the county surveyor a call, or me a call, and says, hey, we've got this new deed in here, and it looks like a violation of the map. Should you look at it? Then the surveyor and I together look at it, and we've got 15 or 20 cases where we've had people either by mistake or intentionally violate the map act. So that's an important reason. The other reason is, your job is to assess and evaluate the most valuable commodity in the economy, which is land. And the way that commodity is divided up is by subdivision law. So you really need to have a touch of subdivision law to do that. Let's go to the next page. How did I get involved in this? I've been an attorney for about 35 years. That's frightening. 35 years next January. And I've been with assessors, with county council, with assessor's office, with surveying office. I got into property tax law about 22 years ago with a case. Anybody here from Imperial County? There was a case in Imperial County called Kern versus County of Imperial. It wasn't a battle between Kern County and Imperial. It was a farm family named the Kerns. And they, with a couple other families, had a huge farming operation that, upon the retirement of Mr. Kern, they wanted to divide it up amongst the families and go their separate ways. So they used the Subdivision Map Act to get exempt parcels, and then they transferred those parcels into the individual families. And they tried to use the provision of law, Revenue and Taxation Code, Section 62, that says if your interest in a parcel of land is the same before and after a transfer to a different legal entity, it's not an assessable situation. And what they were doing was, each of these families had a percentage, let's call it 33% of the entire farm. It wasn't that, but let's say they had a third of the entire farm before the transfer, and then they gave it off to the individual families, and they gave a third to each of the families. They said that's an equal percentage. Now, today we don't hold that as true, but back in the 80s, when this thing first came up, that was a really big thing, and it was a huge farm. Thousands of acres of the most productive farmland in North America. And so it was a big case, and I happened to be the litigator for Imperial County back then, and they gave me the case, and I beat out one of the most prominent property tax law firms in the state, Agilent and Poley. And then when I came here a couple months later, your assessor's office discovered I'd been the attorney in that case. They said, ah, we got a property tax attorney. And it stuck to me like glue, and I've been a property tax attorney. Mm-hmm. I was a litigator, but I instantly became a property tax attorney. Okay, so division of land. Real property can be divided. These are the ways you get it divided. And some of these you don't see often, but you need to know they're there. By conveyance. There's three kinds of conveyance. A deed, a lease, and a mortgage or deed of trust. Okay, how does a lease do it? You can record a lease. If you have a lease, other than an agricultural lease, on a specific legal description, and you record that, that's a subdivision of land just like a deed would be. Okay, mortgage and deed of trust. What I want to point out here is a lot of people don't know the difference between a mortgage and a deed of trust. They say, I paid off my mortgage. And they're probably in California, you don't have a mortgage. They're very rare here. The difference between a mortgage and a deed of trust is a mortgage you give the guy that owns you, that you owe the money to, a right to come in and take the land away from you if you don't pay. A deed of trust, you give some honest third party the actual title to the land. The trust company holds your, they own your land until you pay that guy that you own the money off. A little bit different. In California, we use deed of trust, okay? Subdivision map, that's the core of a lot of what I'm gonna talk about today. In California, the very first Subdivision Map Act was in 1893, and there was other ones in 1913, 1929, 1972. I'll be talking about a bunch of those later, but a subdivision map in California can actually divide the land without any deeds having been passed. And the key thing, what a subdivision map is, it's a map that allows lot and block description of land. Until 1893, you had people going out and, you know, drawing maps on pieces of paper and taking them to the recorder's office and saying, this is a subdivision of Lower Santa Barbara or the town of Naples. And there was no legal basis for them whatsoever. And it got really out of hand. People were getting cheated. People were taking these maps back east and selling people land in Santa Barbara, California. And it was not surveyed, it was not appropriate, so the state passed the law and said that. That's what a subdivision map is. It's a map that has lot and block description of land that now a subdivision map divides land. The other way you can divide it is a court order. If a judge says, I'm dividing this land up, and you record that court order, it can divide land just like a deed. However, the law is that that judge has to follow the Subdivision Map Act, and if it requires a local approval, the judge will send in one of the parties or the other to the county to get approval before they do it. Okay, next slide. Okay, I'm going to leave off a lot of this because you've got Alan Martin coming in for a whole hour on legal descriptions, but I just wanted to quickly say the way that you describe land, which most of you are going to know this, is township, range, and section, meets and bounds description, I'll go through these a little more, reference to another document or map, including lot and block designation on a recorded map or a survey. Okay, he'll talk about those more. I'm going to hit them really fast. Next one. This is probably old hat to you. I just wanted to mention it. In my normal presentation, I have to explain it to a lot of people that don't have the experience of this. You do. Some of you might not know, since you only practice in one part of the state, we have three different, you see here, you got the land is divided up under a prime meridian and a baseline. You have three different ones in the state of California. You got the Humboldt way up north, just one upper corner. You've got the Mount Diablo, which most of the state is covered with, which is centered upon the extinct volcano in Contra Costa County. And in Southern California, which includes Santa Barbara here, you have the San Bernardino meridian and baseline. And anybody from San Bernardino County here?
No.
No? Okay. Out in San Bernardino County, you have the town of Rialto. If you go there, there's a north-south street that's actually called, I think it's Meridian Avenue. And you have an east-west street, which is called Baseline. And somewhere underneath the traffic light, at that, I assume, I think there's a traffic light there. In the middle of that intersection, there's a brass monument that designates the middle of Baseline Meridian, which is going to be right there. It's in the middle of the street. And so entire Southern California is measured from the middle of that intersection in the city of Rialto. A little bit of trivia for you. Okay. I'm not going to go through much more of this. You, as mappers, know most of that. Meets and bounds description. I think Alan Martin is going to cover a lot of that. Basically, the meets and bounds description is probably also second nature for most of you. You start at a given known point and describe the parcel not by the sections and north half and south half like the public land survey system, but you describe it by a geometric shape starting at a given point. Places you can start that geometric shape from are a PLS corner, PLSS corner, a point described in another document like the north corner of Mr. Jones' property, a geographic feature, a natural man-made project, object, such as the top of the granite rock at the highest point of Mount Whitney. You could start a legal description from that, or a flagpole in the town square. We actually have a little town called Los Olivos here, and there's a flagpole in the middle of the street, and one of the lots near there describes how far it is from the flagpole in the downtown of Los Olivos. Okay, or a survey monument. So you'll get a lot more of this from Alan Martin. I'm going to try to cut short a lot of stuff right here. Let's see. Meets and bounds descriptions are sometimes used in PLS areas where you don't get an actual square block, like the north half, the south half of such and such section, but they're always used in Spanish land grant areas. Okay. Now, go to the next slide. Okay, this is a typical, you've probably seen it many times. This is a subdivision map from, I think, about 1912, and it allows you to do lot and block description. After 1893, it was illegal to record a map with lot and block descriptions on it unless you got the county's approval of the subdivision map. So records of survey after that can't have lot and block descriptions. You have parcel A, B, C, but you can't have lot and block descriptions. So you describe this, I'm selling you lot two of block A of the map of town of Los Olivos, or town of Sisquat. Easy there. Okay, let's go to the next one. This is where it gets some interesting stuff that a lot of people may not know about. Okay, I call these Spanish land grants. It's really not true. Everything here except for that one are Mexican land grants. You'll get that on the next page. There's both Spanish land grants and Mexican land grants in California. These here, this is how our county of Santa Barbara is divided up between the Spanish land grants and the standard public land survey system. As you can see, most of the public land survey system is out there in the wilderness area where the National Forest Service owns. And very, very little of the developed part of the county is actually in the public land survey system. I happen to live in a little bitty shadow area right there in Ballard, and my lot goes from the public land survey system. But over my back fence is a Spanish land grant. So, and everything in that Spanish land grant is going to be named by a meet and bounds description from some, usually a historic point. It can be an oak tree sitting on the top of the hill. Good luck finding an oak tree that was there in 1853. So you see what our problem is, and go on to the next page. Spanish land grants, this is a list of them. There were 23 Spanish land grants in the whole state of California. And I think it's about 13 counties over on the far end there. But you can see here, some of these Spanish land grants were humongous. Here's 167,000 acres, which is everything from downtown Long Beach, I think, to Irvine. Now, you practice there today, you probably know that there's a lot of that that's done by public land survey system. Why is that? Because when the Mexicans took over from the Spanish in 1821, the revolution and all that, Mexican government and their reform system took away almost all the Spanish land grants and put them back into the public system. Okay, and then they reissued them in a way that's very similar to our homestead. So in the last map you saw all those in our county, those were all done under the Mexican government. They were homesteaded type things. These were political giveaways to powerful families and the church and things like that. And they're huge things. Some of them are still there. Some of them, like for the missions and stuff like that, are still there. But most of what you see under Spanish land grants are actually Mexican land grants, because almost all of these were taken away by the Mexican government. So what you need to know for subdivision law is inside those Mexican or Spanish land grants, if you have one, everything is done by meets and bounds description. Okay? Unless it was taken back by the Mexicans and was never granted out again, and then when the Americans took over in 1848, our public land survey system. So I think down in Orange County, place like that, a lot of it is public land survey system, except for the areas that have a Mexican land grant. Okay, next page. No, this is fine. I already talked about most of this. Mexican secularization law is what did it. The Mexican government after the revolution was very good about undoing some of the worst parts of the Spanish land grant system. Okay, go to the next one. Okay, I think Alan Martin may talk about this, but this is a mixture between surveying law and subdivision law, and you probably need to know it if you're looking at, if you get two different deeds here and you don't know, they both cover the same area of land, what are the priorities there? And this is a list. If you take anything away to put in your drawer, this might be a good list to do. This is the right of priority between two conflicting descriptions of land. It's a handy thing to know. The first one is the right of possession. You've heard of the ninth possession is 9/10 of law. This is where it comes from. If you have a fence around your land, you've been using it for a while, you have a priority over the neighbor. You may have to go to court to prove it. It's not going to just be on your deed, but possession is 9/10 of law. That's the first priority. The second one is senior right. If you've got two deeds, one of them says the north 2/3 of block such and such, and the other one says the southerly 2/3 of block such and such. Over the middle third of block such and such, you've got a conflict. Who wins? The person with the senior deed, the first deed that got recorded, gets the middle third of block such and such. Okay, next one, written intent of the parties. You can look at this, if they have a call to a known survey, if there's an error in something, and they both call that known survey, the known survey applies, because it shows the intent of the parties to use that. Or a call to a monument, natural, man-made, that takes priority, it's very high priority in this. Next one would be a call to distance. Okay, distance takes precedent over direction. Okay, and distance and direction take priority over area. So if you get, a 1 acre parcel occupying the northern 200 feet of parcel A, and the 200 feet of parcel A isn't so many acres, then you give priority the distance. 200 feet goes first, and way down below, area goes. So it's all priority. This is an important list. Coordinates, such as the north half, the south half, that's the very last priority you have. So when you look at things, use this list. It's a handy list to have, and a lot of people don't know about it. Okay, now I'm getting to the heart, finally, of what you asked me here for. California Subdivision Map Act. Okay, it's a section of the government code. It started in 1893. It's been amended since. There were really big amendments in 1972. And for a long time in the history of the Subdivision Map Act, the term subdivision, I'm skipping ahead of here. I'll deal with the term subdivision later. For this slide, what you need to know is that there's something out there called the Subdivided Land Law. A lot of people get confused between the Subdivision Map Act and the Subdivided Land Law. Subdivided Land Law is the thing that big subdividers have to do when they file a report with the California Department of Real Estate, basically describing what they're selling, what kind of improvements there are, and all that stuff. Totally different than the Subdivision Map Act, where the local city or local county gives approval for the map. Totally different things, don't get them confused. Department of Real Estate has nothing to do with subdivision law, except for they're the place where you go after you get the subdivision and you want to sell this, you have to do the sort of consumer-oriented product protection type thing. Okay, the other thing that the Subdivision Map Act isn't, is it's not land use law and it's not zoning law. It works very closely with them, but they're totally different sections of the code. Okay, now, next slide. Okay, now we're talking about what a subdivision is. This is one of the biggest areas of controversy right now in subdivision laws. When did the map create a subdivision? as I said, the first subdivision map act was 1893, and for a long time we said anything after 1893, if you record the subdivision map, that's a subdivision. Well, I'll show you in a little bit with some cases, that's not necessarily true, because in getting pushed to the limit, some of the counties fought back and said, no, all those old ancient maps like the town of Sisquoc there, they didn't, weren't actually intended to create maps, and they were create parcels by themselves, and they were just something you could sell by deed, and when you did the deed, that divided them. I disagree with a lot of that, and the reason I disagree with it is I've been an assessor's attorney for a long time. I know that when that map of Sisquoc was recorded back in 1912, the first thing the assessor did was go get one of those big old humongous books, and they'd write down every one of those parcels, and it was an individual parcel, and we recognized every one of them. We taxed every one of them. If you didn't pay your taxes, that parcel got taken away from you. And all these cases I'm talking, I'm going to tell you about in a minute, forget that. We really did treat these like legal parcels all the way back. So I think that some of the law that I'm going to teach you in a minute is wrong. I'm just giving you a preface for it. And when I retire, I'm going to find somebody that has some of these lots. I'm going to get really rich shutting this down the throat of the people that are okay. All right. Prior to the implementation of local ordinances, okay, under the Subdivision Map Act, a division for many, many years, in fact, until 1972, was anything five or greater. If you created five or greater lots, that was a division, and that was controlled by state law. Four or fewer lots was controlled by local law, if at all. And it was only controlled by local law if you had a local ordinance. So you can look at these old historic things. You need to know what date your local ordinance was first in effect. In Santa Barbara County, it's July 26, 1956. Okay, we know that's the first time that four or fewer parcels was a subdivision in Santa Barbara County. It's going to be different for your county. Some of them didn't get around to it until 1966 when they were required to do it by state law. Some of them had them back in 1912. Okay, so you need to know that. When did you have a local ordinance defining what a subdivision was in your local county? It's something you ought to go back and find out from your county council. Okay, after local ordinances, any division required a subdivision map unless specifically exempted by the ordinance. I told you about the farmers down in Imperial County. They had an exemption for farm lots. There's a lot of things that were exempted from local ordinances. Political power allows for exemptions. So your local ordinance controls four or fewer lots, and it also controls some of the ways that five or more lots are done. State law controls five lots or more, going back to 1929, and then part of that you'll see what some of the cases have. Okay, somebody should map that concept and term. Next one. Okay. Final map, it's probably something that's going to be helpful for you. You may have heard some of these things. I'm going to try to explain what they are. Okay, a final map and a tentative map. This is something that takes place under the state statute, Subdivision Map Act, and a final map and tentative map. When you, I'll show you each of these in just a minute. A tentative map is something you come in and you ask for permission to divide your land from the Planning Commission and the County Board of Supervisors, or the City Council and the Planning Commission. And then they approve it and say, yeah, that looks like a good idea. And then you come back in later with the final map. You'll see both those in a minute. Parcel map or lot split map. This is under the local ordinance for fewer lots. You come in and you just bring in probably an example of what you want. You ask the planning department, the planning commission, is this okay? They give you approval, and then you're allowed to record that map. An amended map. It's one of the other maps above where you need to change something because something doesn't work. Some easement doesn't work. Some lot needs to be moved. You discover you can't build on that lot. You need to move the lot line. You need to amend the map that's already there. That's what an amended map is. A record of survey. You'll see one of those in a minute. A record of survey is different than all these. The reason I list it here is that under some previous editions of the Subdivision Map Act, records of survey were allowed to be used as a replacement for the final map, tentative map, or parcel maps I talked about up above there, such as in the 1936 Map Act, going on through the 1950s, if you had a huge subdivision, like you wanted to subdivide the southeast corner of Santa Barbara County. It was something where you wouldn't be able to put it all on a final map, all the lines and all the easements and everything. You could just do a record of survey, surveying the outside boundaries of that, and get an exemption for it under the Map Act. And that filing of the record of survey actually constituted your subdivision map. A lot of people get confused because they see in local ordinances, oh, a filing of a record of survey, and they think, ah, a record of survey can subdivide land? No, not unless it was under some specific provision of law that gave you an exemption from filing a real subdivision map and allows you to file a subdivision map instead. It's a real important concept. A lot of people see they've got a record of survey on their land and say, ah, all those parcels, all those lines, my land's all divided up. Not true unless you have a deed that goes with that record of survey, unless it's one of these very rare cases where, by law, a record of survey was allowed to take the place of a final map. Okay, certificate of compliance. This is really a lot. This is an area where a lot of different counties deal with it differently. I've not seen any other county that deals with it quite like we do in our county, but the concepts are the same, and there's a lot of lawsuits on this particular one. What a certificate of compliance is under Section 66.499.34 and 35 of the Map Act. If you have an illegally divided parcel, you can come in to the county or the city and say, mea culpa, I own this illegal parcel. I've owned it since 1997. I want to be able to legally sell it. What do I have to do? Why do you need to come in for that? Because if you have an illegal parcel, it's actually a crime to sell it in California. If you're the owner of land and you divide your land up, not in accordance with the Subdivision Map Act, you've actually committed a Class 3 felony. You can get a year in the county jail and a $10,000 fine. So that's why people come in and get these certificates of compliance. If you've got a parcel that you don't have a certificate of compliance for and doesn't show up on a Map Act, right now lenders are requiring you to come into the county or the city and get a certificate of compliance because they don't want to have anything to do with this thing because it might be illegal and they're stuck with a parcel that you can't sell and that they've loaned you money on. So that's why certificates of compliance is a growth industry in the state right now. So there's two kinds of certificate of compliance. There's unconditional ones, which is, I have a legal parcel, I want to prove to the title company I do. You come in, somebody looks at it, in our case, it's the county surveyor, looks at it, says, yeah, that's legal. You divided it in 1943, and that was legal back then to do that. And they give you an unconditional certificate of compliance. You go and you show it to whoever you want, proving your parcel is legal. The other one is a conditional certificate of compliance. That's the one you get if you have an illegal parcel. Okay? And what the county or the city can do with that is that they can condition the issuance of that conditional certificate of compliance in the same way that they could have conditioned the issuance of a subdivision map back when the parcel was created. Okay, and there's two rules here. If the current owner was the owner at the time of the first illegal subdivision, you can apply the current subdivision laws and current zoning laws and the current conditions to it. If the current owner is an innocent purchaser of something that was illegally subdivided sometime back in history before they had any part of it, you have to apply the conditions at the time they took title to the property. So if a property was illegally divided in 1940 and Mr. Smith buys it in 1990, you apply the zoning standards, the subdivision requirements, if you want to, the county, of 1990. If Mr. Smith owned it in 1940, and he still owns it today, or his estate owns it today, then you can apply the current standards to it. Okay, so innocent purchasers are protected to only have what it was when they bought it. Okay, a couple of exclusions, exemptions. These are important when you're looking at these things to see if there's something illegal. Lot line adjustments. A lot line adjustment is an exemption from the Map Act. If you look in the Map Act for a lot line adjustment, it's just one little section that says lot line adjustments of four or fewer parcels are exempt from this Map Act. So you're probably a local ordinance, as we have, that controls your lot line adjustments. Well, I'll show you in a minute a lot line adjustment to show you what it does. transfers to or from a government entity or utility are exempt. If it's to a city, if it's to a sanitation district, if it's to PG&E, to or from one of those entities, they're exempt from Subdivision Map Act. Big loophole right there. Okay, agricultural leases. Agricultural leases are exempt from the Subdivision Map Act. But the other side of that two-edged sword are agricultural leases do not divide land. Okay? A regular lease, if I lease such and such a homestead and it's not for agricultural purposes and I record it, that is a subdivision of land and has to comply with the Map Act. But an agricultural lease does not have to even if you record it. Okay, oil and gas and mineral leases. They do not have to comply with the Subdivision Map Act. Various special cases such as solar power, wind energy, biogas. If you're dividing land up to put some of those special case things on it, in the modern era, there's special exemptions that say if you want to divide this 40 acres over here from your current lot, and the only purpose you're going to use that 40 acres for is a biogas plant, with provisions you don't have to get a subdivision after that. You have to look at the special cases. Okay, now I'm going to do one that shows you both lot line adjustments and what sale lease plan. Okay, what we have here, originally you've got this in the, this is a real case that I litigated up in the central part of the county. Originally you had the red and the green. You had lot A and lot B. And J. Gall Corporation owned both of those. They sold lot B to Mrs. Smith. Okay, and then they sold They sold lot B to Mrs. Smith. J. Gall still owned lot A. Then J. Gall Corporation goes bankrupt. Okay. Stop. J. Gall Corporation and Mrs. Smith want to lot line adjust their property so that there's a straight line between them. Okay. And they do it, they come in, they get a county lot line adjustment, and they move that angled line over, and they get the black line. So between J. Gall Corporation and Mrs. Smith, they agree this is our boundary, they come in, they get our approval, we give them a lot line adjustment. J. Gall Corporation has a mortgage on their land. We forget to get an amendment to the mortgage. So Bank of America has a deed of trust over the red. J. Gall Corporation owns down to the black. Mrs. Smith owns from the black down. Then J. Gall Corporation goes bankrupt. They lose the land back to Bank of America. Bank of America comes in, forecloses under deed of trust against the red part. Really upsets Mrs. Smith. She just lost the upper corner of her lot that she owns and didn't know anything about it. And Bank of America has a lot that doesn't match the current legal description, but they foreclosed on what they had a title to, which was the red from their deed of trust before the lot line adjustment. And guess what? J. Gall Corporation comes and says, hey, I still own the little green triangle because it didn't get foreclosed on, and I owned it from the lot line adjustment. Mrs. Smith comes to me in the county and says, they can't do this, can they? And so I get involved in it. And we joined the thing saying that foreclosure by Bank of America was a violation of the Subdivision Map Act because it was not, once we'd approved the lot line adjustment, their transfer of the deed to the subsequent owner of Lot A wasn't approved by us. Bank of America says, oh, that's not fair. Our original mortgage was legal. But you're selling it to somebody else when it wasn't the current approval, was it? But what I did was, I found out that when they went bankrupt, J. Gall Corporation had horrendous amount of debt, okay? And this little piece wasn't listed in their bankruptcy. And I also found out because J. Gall was kaput, that they had not filed their corporation documents for several years in California. And so they come back to this court case and join and say, hey, we own the little green triangle. I went to the judge and said, judge, California law says that a corporation that's not currently registered with the Secretary of State has no right to maintain a cause of action in California courts. Please dismiss J. Jay Gall Corporation from this case. The judge says, you know what? You're right. Basically, I got a civil death penalty against Jay Gall Corporation. So Jay Gall Corporation was gone from this, and that allowed me to get a stipulation by Mrs. Smith and Bank of America that the black line really was true. They quit claiming the line, and everybody was done, and Jay Gall Corporation went away with nothing. But that's a good reason. That tells you finance really matters. That deed of trust really does matter. And that also shows you what a lot line adjustment can do and the power it has and how it interferes or sometimes helps the subdivision map act. Okay, let's move on to that one. I don't think that this group needs this that much. What this is a provision. This is something that somebody processing a map might need. Basically what it says is that property that is contiguous is still contiguous even if separated by roads. You're not gonna, you know, I don't think in your line of work you're going to need to know that, but highway or a canal between a lot doesn't necessarily mean that they're not contiguous. But I fought this battle with a lot of attorneys that misuse the word contiguous. They say, these lots are contiguous. I only have one lot. You can't get at me for the legal division because I have a contiguous lot. By its nature, the word contiguous means it's one thing touching another. That means you've got two lots. Contiguous doesn't mean one lot. It means you've got two lots. That's a little semantic that a lot of people tried to say that they didn't violate the law because they're still contiguous. When they gave away, here at the State Highway, imagine if you deeded away that to your neighbor in a fee transfer, you say, oh, my lots are still contiguous. And, yeah, but they've been subdivided. Contiguous doesn't mean one. Okay, let's go on. Okay, you've probably seen a lot of these. I put all these in here because I talked about what a record of survey is earlier. Just want to explain it. In California right now, a record of survey does not create a subdivision. If you have parcels listed on it, unless there's deeds that go along with it, and those deeds have to be from before the time when the Subdivision Map Act required a map, or it's an exempt from the subdivision map, the record of survey by itself doesn't do anything to create a parcel map. Never did, except in that one unique case, like in the 1936, where the law specifically said you can avoid the map by doing a record of survey. But you'll often see, in your historical view of things, you'll see a 1952 record of survey that says parcel 1, parcel 2, parcel 3. And somebody sees that recorded, and they see that it's their property, and they automatically think, well, I've got three parcels. Not necessarily so, unless it was divided back in 1952, and that was prior to your local ordinance that allowed you to do it, or some other basis of that. Just having a record of survey that shows lots doesn't mean your land is divided. But then again, when it happened back in 1952 and it came into the assessor's office and you didn't need a subdivision map for that kind of lot, your assessor's office may have made a separate APN for each of those lots shown on the record of survey, which confuses people, and you see it quite often. You saw on the ArcGIS thing, a lot of the lots had shaded lines underneath the total parcel, and those are the historical lots. They can be something that's shown there just because there was a record of survey that didn't really create lots there. So moral of the story is records of survey don't create lots by themselves, and they often, if they're the historical basis of things that are in assessor's parcel map, can cause a lot of confusion, especially by the uninitiated taxpayer that thinks, oh, I've got lots. Especially when you show them on your APN, and they get their APN, and there's these dotted lines that I own three lots. No, you have three historical parcels for some reason underneath your current APN. Okay, tentative map. I told you. Tentative maps. This is the working thing that when somebody wants to subdivide their land, they bring into the county or the city, and they say, here's my idea of what I want to do. I'd like to get your tentative approval of this. So it looks a lot different. This one here has topography here. The reason they have topography on the tentative map is you've got to show where your building envelopes are going to be so that you can prove that each one of these lots you're putting in has a building envelope that can be used. Okay, it's going to show contemplated easements. It's going to show contemplated access, contemplated build-outs, existing easements, things like that. It's going to be a working document so that the planning department and then the planning commission can say, yes, we like your idea of dividing in this way. Okay, that's what a tentative map is. It doesn't subdivide land by itself. There's a special creature called a vesting tentative map, and what that does is it just basically locks in that approval so that the law or zoning or conditions change from the time of that vesting tentative map until you get your final map done, you're protected. That's all the vesting means. It doesn't actually divide anything. Okay, just to explain what a vesting tentative map is, that's a confusion. Okay, parcel map for four or fewer parcels. In our county, we also call this, prior to 1966, a lot split map. A lot of counties call that that also. Parcel map, lot split map, same thing, different period of history. Basically, this is the final, I don't like to use the word final, this is the ultimate parcel map that gets approved and gets recorded. The filing of this with the certificate by the county creates these four or fewer parcels. It may look different in your jurisdiction. A lot of parcel maps these days are looking like final maps. Speaking of which, here's the final map. Unique creature, it's got first page of the final map is going to have dozens of different certifications. You've got a certification by the owner that I have the right to divide this land and I'm the only one that has it. You might have other owners. You know, if it's subdividing multiple owners' property, they're all going to have to sign here. You've got clerk of the board statement saying the board of supervisors accepted the streets on this map. You've got soils report, easement holders, and different surveyor statement, and the county council's, the city council statement in this case, I use the city map, and then the board of supervisors statement, where the clerk of the board will say the board of supervisors on September 12, 1997 approved this subdivision map. Okay, and then it's recorded that subdivided land. The subsequent next one, subsequent pages, that was the first page of the final map, are going to be the nuts and bolts of where the parcels are. Okay, this one here, this is a one page, second page. You can have multiple second pages. If you have a big division, you'll have page one, page two, page three. They're all going to show different parcels. This one here is just the one page. This has all the survey data you need. You can go directly from this, digitize it, and put it into your GIS. It's good to go. Okay, this filing with the recorder's office divides the land. They're legal separate parcels when you file them, just like a lot split map. Okay, let's go on. Now, for the average person, this is where it gets confusing. You understand what's going on now. But your average person comes in and sees the assessor's parcel map, and they think, aha, I've got 12 parcels under my land. Because this thing shows them. There may be a lot of reasons for that assessor's parcel number being there. It could have been that there was a record survey back somewhere and the assessor at that time decided to do it. Somebody may have one line down the middle of their land think, oh, I've got two different parcels because of that line. As you all know, that could be a school district boundary that cuts across through one legal parcel, but because that side is the Garcia School District and that side is the Smith School District, you have to have a tax boundary there, and that creates two different APNs on one land. But a lot of those 10 or 15 illegal divisions that the assessors found last year, the people coming in looking at their assessor parcel map say, aha, I own two parcels, I'm going to give that to my cousin Joey, and they deed it off, and that creates a lot of confusion here. So see this notice up here, down here. You probably have something very similar. If you don't, you ought to implement it. What it is, it's a warning to everybody saying, everything shown on this is not necessarily a legal parcel. It's just done for purposes of tax assessment. Really critically, if you don't have this, I'd heartily recommend you get to the other county council and your assessor and implement this. Okay? It's saves a lot of people from really making a bad mistake and thinking they had more than they had. Okay? Let's see. I think that's all on that one. Got another accessory parcel map. Well, let's go back. What I'm doing is I'm showing you the map of the town of Naples here. And you look right up in here. See, this is a general accessory parcel map. It doesn't show anything, but go to the next one. This is a blow up of that particular area I just pointed to. And this shows some of those historic parcels there. For those of you who don't know, the town of Naples is a historical 1883 map where somebody had huge dreams. It's prior to the subdivision map act. They went out there and they mapped out this whole area. It's on the coast about halfway to the point out here. And they divided it up. They sent out salesmen all across the country. They sold people pieces of Santa Barbara County, the town of Naples on the California Mediterranean coast, California Riviera. Okay, and they sold a bunch of these off. A lot of them didn't sell, but they never got it developed. Nobody ever, other than a couple of streets, nobody ever put any development or improvements there, and it just died. Then come 1980, somebody said, hey, you got all these lots out there, we're going to develop them now. And got in a big battle. It's called Morehart versus County Santa Barbara. This is the map that it comes from. And I'm going from that, let's go one more. Hold that thought. I'll show you what resulted that in a minute. We're going to talk about fraction lots. Every county in the state did this differently. You've heard of cookie cutter? I heard the ArcGIS guy talk about cookie cutter. For a long time, people in California viewed the subdivision process other than those in maps. If you deeded something off, they had cookie cutter. Let's deed off one way and then deed another way. It created all these little pieces. Let's show you. Let's go through here. Here you have Montecito Avocado Ranch, the green over there, circa 1911. Okay, this is part of the Pueblo lands, which is a Mexican land grant given to the city of Santa Barbara in order to fund the government of the city of Santa Barbara. This is part of the Pueblo land. It was deeded off, outside green boundary. Next slide. Come 1913, a guy named O'Neill, he had Old Coast Highway here, he had East Valley Road. He thought it'd be really cool to divide this land up into smaller pieces and give everybody access to the two possible roads. This is the road to Los Angeles down there, and this is a local road around there. Divided up this way, and he sold off one of the lots. And the other guy bought the other two lots, so another guy owned all three of them. Next slide. That guy wanted to have more lots, so he deeded off eight of these. Didn't deed them all off, and eventually came back and into the same ownership again. But so what you've got here with these two different sets of deeds, if you believe in cookie cutter lots, instead of the eight that he thought he was doing there, you've got, what is that, 16? Okay, so they came in and they said, I want CCs for all these. They're all legal, back in 1910, 1913. Give me 16 CCs. This is Montecito Avocado Ranch. If you go right down here, you pass it on the way up here. This is absolutely the most valuable per square foot land in the state of California. And having 16 subdivided lots of it was absolutely pure gold. So they were willing to fight big time on this one. At that time, we didn't have any tools to do it. What we do have, though, is now, we finally worked out a deal. We gave them 10 of them. They went away. They were very happy. But we didn't have any tools to stop this because everybody thought cookie cutters exist. Okay, go one more slide there. What you have is you have the case of people in the state of California versus the Board of Supervisors of the County of Tehama. What this was the County of Tehama used the cookie cutter theory and said, okay, we'll give you all those lots, wink, wink. And the California Department of Conservation had Williamson Act contracts. Well, there were Williamson Act contracts on this, and the Department of Conservation didn't like the idea of these Williamson Act contracts allowed to be subdivided by this cookie cutter principle. And they came in, they sued the board for issuing the CCs on it. And they won. And the County of Tehama came up. This is a really important case that they applies retroactively if you look at things right now, because you apply it every parcel. What the Haman said was, the most recent subdivision of land, if it created new parcels, you can impute on it an intent to create one parcel. So go back one. So what that says is, when you did the yellow, your intention when you deeded out those yellow parcels was to create the yellow parcel, and that gets rid of the underlying red line. Okay, so basically the County of Tehama case wipes out the concept of cookie cutter lots in California, with one exception. And that one exception is, if you have a remainder, you deed off a bunch of stuff and those are all created. If you have a remainder, it doesn't get rid of the remainder or any lots that might be part of that remainder. Okay, so if you have the situation here, and you deed each of these off, it doesn't necessarily mean that this part over here isn't a cookie cutter. Because your intent is to create that yellow lot, because you're showing your intent by deed. It doesn't say anything about this. So the only exception to the Tehama case is for remainder lots. Okay, but it's a really important case, and the concept of cookie cutters no longer applies in California except for remainders. That's an important thing. You hear cookie cutter all the time. In fact, you heard it just now in ArcGIS. Cookie cutter are no longer legal subdivisions in California, except in a few limited cases. Okay, here's another fractional case. Go one more. Okay. What this is this is one of those Spanish land grants that I showed you originally. And this is homestead land over here in the public land survey area. And what you had was big farming family, the Wickenden family, owned this one and owned this one. And about 1941, the homestead house was right there. Mm-hmm. Okay, and Mr. Wickerson wanted to make sure his wife got her homestead, so he deeded to himself and his wife this right here. Some of this from the homestead area, some of that. And so he had that created. And fast forward to today, Fox and Oaks Company owns the blue. They said, hey, the creation of this line here was by a Spanish land grant. That's separate, it's not controlled by California subdivision land law. And that created this parcel here. We want a CC for that little parcel, in spite of Tehama. And we said, no, we disagree with that. Tehama applies in all cases. And they were going to litigate it, and somebody thought better of it, and they didn't. But that's kind of case where Tehama will protect you from having all these little bits and pieces. This is an 100-acre zoning. That little piece was like 4 acres. It would have been a windfall for them. Okay, now we're going to go back to the part I was talking about with Naples. Next one. Okay, in 1883 through 1888, this guy that owned the Naples land grant, which is a Mexican land grant, did this plan of Naples. This is out on the coast. As you drive up 101, it's absolutely undeveloped today. He had dreams that when the railroad went through here, that this beautiful coastal land would be very valuable, and he created this plan of Naples, and then he had individual second and third pages where he had all these lots subdivided. You can see here, some of these, they're already divided on this map. He had other ones for this entire thing. Eventually, he had something like 680 different lots that were shown on the map. And he recorded them, because you could do that in 1888. Okay, and so we had a major battle here when the Morhart family came in the early 1980s and said, we've got all these 1888 maps. We're gonna. They applied for building permits for some of these, and said, we're going to start developing them. So this would have been a major 600-unit development on pristine California coast. Okay, so we had to do something. We passed an ordinance protecting from that. Turns out we didn't pass the ordinance correctly. There was a Morhart versus Santa Barbara case. we lost that case. But as a result of losing that case, we recognized we had to do something to recognize some of these lots. And we used the prevailing law, which was lots prior to 1893 are only created by deed. This map didn't create any lots at all. We said they're only created by deed. So the only thing we were willing to recognize was those were created by deed. Go back then. So what we did in 1995, we went into this thing and we did a major study of every deed in history from 1883 to present that was there. There's a lot of these were deeded off. And so we eventually gave them 230 parcels. And this is an interesting reason I have it in here for you is this is the last kind of map. This is an official map. It's in the Subdivision Map Act, I think it's 6649.50 or something. It was started in 1995, and what this is, the county of Santa Barbara, or any county, or any city for that matter, can, by legislative fiat, say, these are the subdivisions of this area of the county. Now, there's a lot of confusion about official maps, because official maps designate legal parcels. This is not the old colored map you see on the courthouse wall from 1890 saying the official map of the county of San Luis Obispo. No, that was just some really pretty map that got commissioned by the Board of Supervisors to show where the county lines were at that time. That's not an official map that creates parcels. But this particular one is the official map of the town of Naples, and this was the Board of Supervisors by legislative act in 1995 saying these are the legal parcels we recognize. We don't recognize all these other lots as legal parcels. And the ones we do recognize are the ones that were conveyed sometime in history by deed. We're not going to recognize all those ones that were just on a paper, called a paper map, the original map of Naples. We will recognize all the ones that were by deed. We're still litigating this thing. It's gone through a bunch of owners and stuff. But that's our position, and we think it'll hold now because the 283 lots is more than they're actually going to get developed under the Coastal Commission. So it's enough for them. But this is how the antiquated maps, which is a pre-1893 map, affects our current law. And you're going to have in your old records, go back to the assessor's parcel maps for 1920, you're going to have every one of those lots in there, because in 1920 they thought they were really legal subdivisions. Okay? I'm trying to move faster. Okay, next one. Okay, this is, I'm just talking about the concept of when legal lots were created. I said 1893 in the Morehart case. That's because that's the first subdivision map act. Somebody here from Sonoma? Okay. There's a bunch of cases, a lot of them come from Sonoma, that have to do with the Gardner versus County of Sonoma. We're going to flip back for you. Go to the next one for me. Okay, there's Gardner versus County of Sonoma, Whitholm Ranch versus County of Sonoma, and Abernathy Valley versus County of Solano. These are the three cases I told you that are the law in California right now, but I think they're wrong. I'm going to get rich someday on them. These are it. Okay, Gardner versus County of Sonoma is a case where not bad facts, but different facts give you a really different spin on the law. They had somebody, there was a one of these antiquated maps out in the rural part of Sonoma County where somebody in, I believe it was 1893. That case, the law said that these pre-1893 maps do not create parcels, that they supported the Morehart case. Okay, and unfortunately, I'm at fault on the thing because I helped write a footnote in one of the amicus briefs of the fight, and we happened to mention a reference to 1929 maps. And we didn't think it, we were saying there's a different law in 1929, we sat it there. And we sent it in, and it existed, and the court noted our argument about pre-1929 maps. And then along comes Whitholm Ranch versus County Sonoma, and this is a case where there was a 1913, I think, or that era map that did the same thing, and it was out in the rural area of Sonoma County. It was multiple parcels. It had never been developed. It had never had any improvements. And in comes this guy saying, I'm going to develop it, just like the other one that we had. But this was after the Subdivision Map Act in 1893. So Sonoma County had to come up with some way to keep this guy from being able to get this absolutely uncontrolled, unconditioned, harebrained subdivision out in the middle of nowhere with no access, no utilities, and all that. And so they used our footnote from the Gardner case and said, maps prior to 1929 are different. Because in 1929, the Map Act said, we grandfathered all those maps that allowed for design and improvement of subdivisions. And they said, prior to 1929, you didn't have design or improvement, you just had approval. And so basically the Whitholm Ranch case said that prior to 1929, most maps didn't subdivide land. And this is the one I think is wrong, because I really think they did, and it was the bad facts of the Whitholm Ranch case that caused it. Then you go to Abernathy Valley for County Solano. They use these other two cases, and basically now, until somebody comes in and challenges it, the law is that only post-1929 maps actually subdivided land and created individual parcels, unless you can prove on an individual map that there was an intent by the county to approve design and improvements. Okay, next slide. Go back to our 1913 map of the town of Sisquoch. Okay, the Abernathy County case talks about minimal reliance. If you didn't rely on this thing like the guy that wanted the windfall out in rural Sonoma did, didn't rely on, then you shouldn't be able to get them back. In this case, though, you've got, this is the town of Sisquoch store. It's right there. My house is down about 5 miles that way. And you've got these lots and blocks there. And you got this kind of thing to build out. Go to the next slide. This is the APN map for that same thing. This little town is almost everything is built out. But if you try to use the Abernathy Valley and the Whitholm's case, you'd say that things like this lot here, where that's the outside boundary and you have these historical parcels in there, that they aren't actually subdivisions. Whereas if you look at the map, it shows the easements, it shows the roads, it shows where the county owns their land, it shows where all these parcels were. There's no reason why you shouldn't think that that old map of the town of Sisquoch really was a subdivision map. And so I think that the Whitholm and the Abernathy Valley cases are wrong. If you've got situations like this, everybody justifiably relied upon this map as being a real subdivision map for the last 98 years now. Why should all of a sudden, because after the fact, Sonoma County comes in and wins their case on bad facts, should these people be harmed and say, hey, you no longer have a lot you always thought you had? Okay, I think I pretty much killed it all there. Any questions?
Our county does a certificate parcel map waiver and also lot line adjustments. Now, in a hierarchy between parcel map, certificate parcel map waiver, and lot adjustments, what are the legal
certificate
differences?
Parcel map waiver means that for some reason, what they're doing is exempted from it. It might be a very large lot. It might be a lot that's fully surveyed and historically recognized. For some reason, they're saying, we don't need a parcel map for that. I would say, we don't have it in our county, but I would say that what that is an acknowledgement of an exemption from the parcel map law. And it will serve the same, whatever's on there will serve the same as a parcel map having been filed for that. Lot line adjustments is a different creature, parcel is lot line adjustment. I would say you could probably do a lot line adjustment for a parcel map waiver, or vice versa. So, does that answer your question?
Yes. Yes.
We've got a number of tracts that were actually done by record of survey. If you look at the record of survey, it's all divided up by lots, and actually was given a tract number also.
That's probably from the period of time when your local ordinance allowed you, we have something very similar during, I think, your late 50s and early 60s, that when you come in, you get your tract map approved, the condition is that you shall file a record of survey within 1 year of the date of this approval. They file a record of survey, boom, they've got a subdivision. That's what that is. The record of survey actually wasn't what created the lots. The approval of the parcel map and saying you have 1 year to file a record of survey is what created the lots. The approval of
but there's no other record map that describes or
right.
divides that.
The map
problem.
Shows what it is, but by law, it was the approval of the parcel map by the county under their local ordinance that created the lot, mm-hmm. and then it's documented by the record of survey.
If you have a record of survey that divides up, say, 10 pieces of 10 lots,
well, we can get his,
but only, say, his, two or three of them have deeds,
presentation to put on.
What you're saying is only those two or three?
Well, unless it's a case like his, where it was under a period of time when the local ordinance or the state law allowed a record of survey to be filed to act as a parcel map or
presentation to get.
If it's just a 1955 record of survey that's intent was to delineate 10 lots and only three of them were deeded, then only those three were created as separate lots, the rest of it's a remainder.
Okay, because this one, it's actually relatively recent. I think it's by the University Deaconess of Lodabar or something like that. They did a record survey, and I don't know how many.
Dwayne's already got a copy of it and okayed the
ticket. Well, remember I said cool. that there's an exemption for a transfer to or from a government agency.
One.
If this is the University of Irvine's land, and they did a record of survey
since
divided
we were just
up and sold these lots for
the
professors to have their houses, which I think is probably what you're talking about.
I was curious.
That's exempt from the Mass Act. But
only
Danforth still applies. Only those which are actually deeded were created. But if they want to deed the other ones, they probably can because it's exempt.
You have a handout of all this? I
want to
get rich with you.
I have this. I understand there will be a CD coming out. You'll have my PowerPoint on the CD.
Right.
On the example you gave with the two parties and the lot line adjustment, if they didn't report, the lot line adjustment was approved, if they hadn't reported fees between the two parties transferring for the adjustment, can the bank foreclosure on the original description?
If they hadn't been deeds, then there would have been no transfer of the title.
Right.
But to carry out the lot line adjustment, you have to record the deed. What we should have done, just to clarify, is we should have required as a condition of the lot line adjustment a subordination of the deed of trust to the new lines, which would have been an amended deed of trust with a new legal description to the black line. We learned that lesson there. It has to be labeled official map, and the board has to act in accordance with 6629.50 of the government code
official
and
map.
Say, we hereby create an official map.
Part of
and this is a special rule. Every member of the board of supervisors has to sign that official map.
I think I've never seen it.
Would you consider a court case that was filed?
No, official map is something approved by the legislative body of a local agency creating. A court case can create, I remember it was one of my exemptions there, a court case can subdivide land, but there's a special provision in the law that says even the court case has to comply with the subdivision map. So if you've got a judge who has a probate case, say, and two brothers want to divide up their father's land after Will gives it to the two of them, and the judge wants to divide the land in the middle, he's got to either appoint a special master or one of the parties to come into the county and get the county's approval of that divide down the middle before the court can issue the court order to divide the two. Even a court order has to comply with the Subdivision Map Act. There's no exemption for a court doing it. There's a lot of cases where people have made that mistake, and the court would have, they'd have to inform the court, hey, that's not our approval. And the way you do that is you would give the parties that own the land, even though the judge had given them an order saying you own this land, you'd hit them with a notice of violation saying your land's illegal. I don't care what the judge said. We didn't approve it. Okay? It's not an official manifest. Only thing is official map is the Board of Supervisors or the City Council saying, we bless this as an official map under this section of the law. Okay? How did I do?
Pretty good.